I'm Susie Sorek.
Okay, yes, I knew that. There were two people out there who may not have recognized your voice.
Okay, fair enough.
So, you came to us from New Paltz today, right?
From Gardner, south of New Paltz.
Gardner,
yeah. A little rainy on the thruway.
I imagine so.
A little stop and go there, but
we didn't hit any tornadoes that we've been...
Not yet, no.
Just hearing warnings about every few minutes here.
A little wind and rain,
and rain has calmed down. We're not listening to the symphony of raindrops that we were to a moment ago.
Yeah.
So you live in Gardner?
Part-time, yes.
Part-time. Where else do you live?
I also live in New York City.
Uh-huh. You have a double residence?
We could say that.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
You own a house, right? You're a true resident of the Hudson Valley.
I am a true resident of the Hudson Valley. I own a house in Gardner.
Wow.
And my studio, and in there most of the time.
I've never been to your house, but I saw a picture of it on the you sent out with your announcement of a show, right? You were announcing a show?
I was announcing a show,
yeah.
Yes.
You want to plug that show right now? Or?
Well, myself along with I think 42 other Hudson Valley artists are in a show at the Dorsky Museum at part of SUNY New Paltz, curated by the wonderful Linda Weintraub, and it's worth a look-see. There's a lot of interesting work there. So I have a video and sound piece and some flat work.
Oh, yeah.
Small framed earthworks there. So
yes, that's right. I really enjoyed your presentation in that show. It was beautiful. Yeah, it's a good show. You're right. It's an amazing show. Yeah, it's got a lot of great things in it.
A lot of different perceptions about how people are working with nature in their art.
Linda Weintraub, who's the curator, is also an artist, and she appears in Art Is as well. Actually, one of the early victims of my camera. Yeah.
Yeah, she's terrific and has done a lot with sustainability in relation to creativity for artists and educators. Good
absolutely,
stuff.
Absolutely. So, how long have you made art in your life?
I would say almost forever, when I was really little. So I think it's always been a part of my life.
You baby geniuses are accumulating today. Jim Paul, who was just here, was telling me practically from the crib he was making art. So I guess that's true for you, too?
Post-crib.
Post-crib.
But maybe, around the same time. I think
you patiently waited till you got out of the crib.
Or at least, if it was in the crib, it is not in my memory bank. I can say that.
Well.
But I do have memories of it from quite early on. I think art got a hold of me at a very young age.
Uh-huh. What did you think you were doing back then? What was art
back then?
I
was thinking about it. I think about it a lot because I teach drawing as well, and I do often think about this, is that I didn't see very well. I didn't see, I'm very myopic. So when I was little, my field of vision was a few feet around me until I was corrected. And so I would bring things, ordinary objects, to me and draw them. And that was a way I got to understand the world. So they're very ordinary objects, just things, and I got to spend time with them and understand them. And through the drawing, I understood them. And then I realized that other people, I guess they were the big people, since I was a little person at that time, would respond to these drawings. And I realized at that point I had some kind of a communication, that I could take this very quiet space, I could communicate this quiet space in a silent language of images.
Does that persist?
It does. I think fast forward and it's not too different. It really, I think those early things kind of set in with a way that I can digest or process the things around me, that I can bring them into my world, into my circle a little bit, and digest is a word. Enjoy. Bring them in and chew on them a bit.
Yeah.
Kind of merge some sort of world around me with my internal world, and that still remains.
So very interesting.
That's along with what art is.
So is art for you a way of knowing reality directly? I mean,
absolutely. It's a kind of direct.
Tell me about that.
Well, I think it's a space, since it's mostly visuals that I work with, I think it's a space beyond language, beyond words. As much as I'm fascinated by words, and I get a lot from combinations of words, poetry and literature, I think that the visual arts, for me, is a way to have a direct experience, really to connect with phenomena on all levels and perceive that, bring that in, and on some form it expresses, it needs a way to come out, and that is the process. So it is something that is beyond language or before language, and it's
where language is words.
Yes, in this way I'm talking of verbal.
Exactly.
Of course, there's a visual language.
There is, and also when you speak with the body, you're not using words, but your sign language is also language, and sign language is a very broad category. I was just thinking about this very interesting book by Marguerite Fox on sign language, on language of the deaf. She said, I haven't read the book yet, but I've read about it. And so it's a question that's interested in me for many years. Is you can do everything with the hand that you can do with the tongue. The fingers, the hand, and the tongue are two very profound characteristics of a human being, as opposed to what we know about most other creatures.
That
we have this opposable thumb thing that makes the language extremely versatile and able to represent, and in all its ambiguity as well as all its specificity. In other words, it's a full functioning language. And I think the whole body is a full functioning instrument of language. Dancers, for instance, are speaking with the body.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think we perceive things through the body, through the skin, just through the sense of what the temperature of today's kind of damp air feels like on the skin. Swimming in the lake. And so there's a way that we're perceiving always. I don't think it's always through the eyes.
One,
but it's coming through in terms of scent and texture and all of those things. So in terms of a direct experience, I think I put all that into the mix.
If you were an Emersonian, you might say that nature has a language and is speaking to us in all of the qualities that we've just heard. We've just been communicated with a rainstorm.
Yes, yes.
And if a tornado comes away, maybe our last communication.
Right.
Very heavy speech.
Sure, landscape, natural landscape, and also urban landscapes. I mean, whether they're noisy and crowded or whether they're expansive and fluid, they're all to take in and process. Yeah.
So tell me more about what art is for you.
Okay. Since we were talking about landscape just now, I think of external landscapes and internal landscapes, and somehow the art is a way that they merge. That I can, and by external landscape, I'm looking out in this beautiful studio, and we're in the woods here, and that's an extraordinary external landscape. But I do mean that by any kind of situation, internal being dreams, consciousness, unconsciousness, that the art is for me some way that those two merge. So it is a bringing in from the external processing. It's inquisitive. It's focus at its best. But that focus, I think, can be very expansive. I think a focus is pinpointing, but often the pinpointing then begins to ask its own questions. The art, perhaps, the energy of the art asks its own questions and propels me forward with something I may be working on, so that focus opens up and becomes more expansive. It's perception that's a big part of it, is for me both awareness and perception of how we see things, how I see things, how other people see things. And I think, I mean, part of what I've been talking about so far is my own process of making art. So art is from me, I've been talking about so far, that sense in the doing is the knowing. Who said that, George? You might know.
A
lot of folks. So it's in that working with the materials, exploring, things begin to unfold. And sometimes they don't. Sometimes they get more confused. But that they begin to unwind, so in that making. But in the same sense, also, when I'm... This art is, I was thinking also, well, what about when I see things out there, not something I've made? It can be man-made or it cannot be man-made. It can be the way disparate things suddenly come into my focus, or a sound or a combination of sounds, a letter, a combination of letters. That, again, with the sense of direct perception, if I can experience something and I have a sense, either through thought or feeling of the body, any of the senses we've been talking about, and this experience now shifts some way that I have perceived the world previously, then that is also what art is for me.
It's interesting, yeah, because the way you're describing art at this moment is something that interests me a lot, actually, which is art as a configurative force. The way that we configure reality, or that even taking out the agency of oneself and saying that it is oneself, but it's oneself in a very large sense, perhaps, that one experiences the configuration of reality, that it's reconfiguring all the time, and we rediscover things. And so that's my question there is always, is it necessary to assign an agency? You raise that question, say, well, it could happen without an artist being present, perhaps, just a configuration of things that you hear and see. And so that's raises a very spooky and interesting question. Is there agency larger than oneself? Is one's own reality intertwined with other reality? And is art, in some sense, revealing that? What do you think?
I do think that... Well, it is the question what you're touching on then, whether the art has to be something that is made by a human.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm suggesting not necessarily. That may be some kind of definition of it, but I would go for a different definition that says it can be things that exist in the world as is. And I guess that goes back to our perception then. So if they're coming through a series of disparate sounds, sights, textures, colors, rhythms, beings, and that is has some transformative way to shift the way I have previously perceived the world, then yes, I would still put that in the definition of art. So then that's going through the perception of myself. That's back to me. But it is saying that it's not necessarily something that another human has made. But if another human has made it, meaning, you know, that something, whether it's, again, in all the different mediums, sound, we'll bring words back here, sound, sight.
You know, it depends on how you see what you're doing when you're making art. I mean, for my part, I have experienced a lot in writing and making art that is not entirely my agency. I'm not talking about channeling in a dramatic sense, though, you know, you can't rule it out. In certain moments, it feels like that. But at other moments, it's more like this kind of weave that goes on between one's presence. It's sort of the other side of the Heisenberg principle of uncertainty is just this kind of other certainty, a certainty that comes from something is really happening, but you sure wouldn't want to have to define it. Because then you get trapped in the limitations of your own cognitive ability to embrace that kind of complexity, you know, just as we have complexity theory in mathematics, chaos theory and all of that, to express realities that do not follow any other description of causality or relationship between events, that's just par for the course in one's own mind, in how you're interacting with that. We just don't focus on it. But if you find that becoming very poignant inside the work that you're making, it spurs you to speculate in very intricately new ways about what's going on.
And that certainty you talk about, where do you feel that? Where do you sense that certainty?
I think...
When you're in the process of making.
From my point of view, what I'm calling certainty is really the absence of doubt about the importance and reality of what is going on. It's not certainty in the sense of I know God exists, or I know the devil exists, or I know they don't exist, or I know the door is going to be there when I walk through it, or something like that, or I turn the handle, it's going to open. That kind of, it's really that there's a high probabilities, really. There's certainties because we accept certainty to be a state of high probability. Because that's just how we deal with reality. If you were uncertain about everything, you would never open the door. You wouldn't go, let alone get in an airplane and go anyplace else. So we deal with these probabilities all the time. It seems to me that art alters that focus in some way, and it does it differently for each of us, so that when we're inside it, we go into a state that is very like certainty.
Absolutely.
Though I wouldn't call it certainty. I know what is happening is right, and I go with it. Mm-hmm. But I've had to train myself to do that. Mm-hmm. And for me, art is that training as well as amongst other things. It has taught me how to be kind of oddly self-reliant, to use an Emersonian term again, self-reliant in accepting the data that is showing up, or the process that is showing up as I make the work, you know. And that's an interesting phenomenon to track in oneself. If you're an introspective sort like me, you're watching that, you're reflecting on that. But you're not getting in its way. You're reflecting on it, but you're mm-hmm. gently reflecting on it because you're allowing it to unfold with its own mysterious force.
Absolutely. At best. Yeah. I mean, that is the problem, how much we can get in its way. But I think I have that experience as well at times. And,
yeah.
you know, part of it is what artists or I sometimes say, being in the zone.
Yeah.
And being in the zone means you're just, you're going with it.
Going
There's
with
an
it.
Energy that
mm-hmm.
is taken over, that's moving mm-hmm. along. It propels me, I'm responding to it, and there is a sense of just knowing of that certainty. Mm-hmm. In and among that, I mean, other times, many things do get in the way, that sense mm-hmm. of doubt and questioning and investigation. But at its heart, I think that is exactly, you've touched on exactly what keeps it all moving, propelling
exactly.
to
yeah.
try to be back in that space, that zone, that sense of just the knowing without being able to clarify what that knowing is as often as possible. And the training, you're right, just to be able to show up for it, is great, is helpful.
Yeah. How does that affect your life?
Well, they're connected. They mm-hmm. are connected. I mean, I certainly would try not to isolate the art process completely from other things.
Yeah.
So it's I think of an example here, but the word that actually comes to mind when you say how is that in the life is intimacy, that it's an intimate conversation, and that conversation can be with myself or it can be with others. So that sense of uncertainty, that absolute direct connection is a direct experience, a sense of awareness, and the most intimate space that we can be in. So when that's shared, that's a fabulous dialogue.
Mm. Do you find that communication with people sometimes?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. With people, with spaces, with mm-hmm. environments, process.
Is it recognizable by what? Its intensity?
Yeah, it's intensity and that lack of doubt. That sense of certainty again, that you know, you just know when there's a complete presence.
Yeah.
I think that's another way to put it.
Mm.
So
and
also in our life to try not to get in the way of many other things
absolutely.
In life.
Absolutely, right.
That can
yeah.
be the list making. I'm very good at that list making process.
When we have this kind of conversation, I really feel sometimes that that art is an instruction in how to be what you are, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It has some force like that, that it unveils an aspect of what you are.
Absolutely.
You think that's true?
I do think so, and it's a matter of remembering that, which is, again, going back to show up for
yeah.
the art practice and to show
mm-hmm.
up for other things in life in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's very good. I'm glad we've been able to talk about this. This is great. One of the things about this, great things about this project for me is that I think new versions of thoughts that interest me a great deal, you
mm-hmm.
know, and they have new qualities, and it stimulates new insights. You know, I think that art, in that sense, is a kind of endless opening process. So far.
I think probably I have to listen to all the other people speaking today and see what they've said too, since I'm here in this time slot. But I think it goes back to that inquisitive, that art really is, and outside of art also bringing it back into life, that kind of curiosity
uh-huh.
is that it's being able to investigate something without necessarily knowing the outcome. And that's a very alive energy. When in that place, it's very alive.
Right.
So curiosity, inquisitiveness, investigation, it can go across the board.
Right.
And as far as
it fits in
the art realm, then it's alive in that sense.
Absolutely. And it happens, as a poet, for me it's a phenomenon of language as well. That language in its most intense, in its greatest intensity, is something I never know necessarily the results of, or the outcome of. It has a resonance that doesn't stop. It continues to affect the very texture of how I think and speak and make further art. Mm-hmm. So it's not, there's no single result. There are many results, and the limit of those results is very hard to state or to know. It's just an open field in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You feel the same in visual arts?
I do.
I know your sculptures and drawings.
Well, in that process, I very definitely do.
Mm-hmm.
And in certain other artists' work, it stays with me in that way as a kind of opening.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all think of the big examples in our life of something that we experienced that had that effect on us in music.
Mm-hmm.
In music,
sure.
As well. It's a very, very big phenomenon in music that it opens up a whole... I mean, Cage was about that, about having... being open to sounds that you otherwise would tend to edit out and disqualify or tune out.
Absolutely.
But that if you listen, if you allowed yourself to hear them as originary productions of the moment, without having to decide whether you really wanted to hear them or didn't want to hear them, that you would discover something very, very other.
Sure.
In that process, yeah.
I think I was also very influenced by Cage in terms of his sense of the space between, like the space between sounds, and I think of the space between thoughts and the space between steps, one step after the other, that kind of a pause, the space between breaths.
Yeah.
So,
he's a
good influence.
Well, in that respect,
his impermanence and his sense of flux and all of that,
a very important influence, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a new biography of Cage that I'll plug by Kay Larson.
Read the review on that. Go ahead and plug it. It's a very good review in the New York Times too.
Yeah, the Times had a good review. I just reviewed it for PAJ. Which will be out shortly. It's a very profound view of John Cage. There are two other biographies, but this one resonates at a depth that the others did not.
Do you think she offers a lot of new insight into
A lot
his
of
work?
New insight into Cage, yeah. A lot
so
of
that goes back to my definition of art. If it offers new insight, new way of perceiving something.
Absolutely, absolutely. In that sense, it's hard to, sometimes it's, you have a book of that quality is hard to distinguish from a work of art. It has its own art quality in that sense. Bounding art with the question of what is real art, what is great art, what is all of that is, I think, limiting. It's not avoidable. Mm-hmm. We do it all the time. We bound art in its object manifestation in a kind of natural way, and we also decide, I don't like that, that's not good art, and we get into that discussion. We just had this discussion, Jim and I, showing how hard it is to keep apart the question of the nature of art itself from the more specifically relative question of what is the good art, bad art, what is enduring art, what art lasts, what art's important art, what's powerful art, all these kinds of questions, which are questions that you live with in yourself, but you don't have to raise them all the time. And sometimes the refusal to raise them creates a space that's quite interesting. Just allow the thing to unfold, just to be open. Living in that kind of negative capability, as Keats said, this being inside... willingness to be inside doubt and mystery and uncertainty without a restless reaching after fact or reason. That's his definition of it, yeah. But something like that. So, yeah. My tape has just run out in terms of the video part of this everybody should know that I am videotaping this as we go.
It's not just sound.
You're only
sound and picture.
You folks out there only get to hear these words, but we get to see the face of the person saying it. So we're talking here to Susie Surik, and we are talking in the context of the project Art Is, which is an ongoing project that has been around for 10 years. I've been filming people for 10 years. I filmed now 1,000 people approximately or more.
Am I 1,001?
You know, it's not quite that neat. I lost track a few hundred ago. Okay. You know, I was trying to keep track, and then I just sort of got lazy about it. But I know that I'm over 1,000 now. Poetry is, music is, and art is, mostly art is actually, but a lot in those other categories. And I've done that in 11 countries, mm-hmm. and something like 21 languages, like last time I counted. Yeah, so.
What's the unifying? Any kind of unifying art is
one of those
across
questions,
the world.
There's one of those questions that I refuse absolutely to answer. And the reason I refuse to answer is because the nature of this project is focusing on art singularity.
Right.
And on the singularity of the possibility of defining art from any artist's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in terms of what I do as an artist or what you do as an artist, but just the simple fact of speaking to the question from who you actually are and what you actually know in your experience, mm-hmm. inevitably produces some nuance of a new definition of art. And as I was saying earlier to Tom, if an anthropologist looked at this project, or a sociologist looked at this project, or perhaps an art historian looked at this project, they would move towards certain generalities and would say the things that I often get asked. You said the one thing, but many people will come up with the idea, the question, well, what are the five things that people most frequently say? And I say, I have no idea, because my brain has refused to register that kind of abstraction about the work. And, you know, I could do it, probably, if I really sat down and thought about it. But that's a thought experiment that I refuse to perform,
mm-hmm.
because it does not bring me the benefit that I'm after in this project. I'm after a certain kind of benefit, which is to create an awareness of the status of the artist's perspective. We're living in a culture that's heavily dominated by the critic's perspective, the art historian's perspective, the curator's perspective, the museum director's perspective, and I really am averse to allowing that to be the dominant perspective personally. It doesn't work that way for me. I read those things, I see those things, I participate in those things, and I go away and continue to inquire on my own. You should be in dialogue with those things, but to accept them as authority. Authority is out of place with your earphones on. Yeah, is out of place in art. Authority is the wrong concept for art. That's the problem. You know, that's what I would say. Whoa, it's okay. Yeah. What do you think about that? That's what I think.
Well, I think the project then asks each artist very specifically what art is for ourselves,
yeah.
a kind of personal thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had just been speaking about this before the tape was changed, what art is. I guess you got me talking about my childhood, or I went right there, you know, what it was for me as a small person, processing my world very intimately and in a space mm-hmm. around me, and how that's continued now. But I think there's just a curiosity. If I think about what art is for me, for my own process, as well as when I feel, among the many things I see and hear out there in the world, some in art contexts, like museums and galleries, and some not, if I feel, aha, this one feels like art to me.
Mm.
Why is that? And we had talked about that earlier, too. And so for me, that was feeling some kind of transformational process, that I am allowed by the nature of what a person has presented or that I'm picking up on, to have a different perception about the world, the human condition, that mm-hmm. I previously did. I'm all for that. That's great. That's where art is.
Yeah.
And there's many things where I can have that experience and many things without it.
Right.
So that's an individual. So I came here with my individual story, and sure, there's a kind of a leaning, what do the others think, you know? And of course I can go to your website and look at the many, you know, the hours of footage and check out the wonderful artists that you've chatted with about each of our individual takes. So it's a great project in that it's gotten the wheels turning too. You know, I appreciate your inviting me to have this chat about what art is and begin to think about it,
mm-hmm.
Something that's a part of my life on usually a daily basis, to really begin to go back and ask those questions that I sometimes take for granted.
Yeah, yeah. Well, people say, what do you want a person to get from your art project of art is. Mm-hmm. And I say, if I had to say one thing, mm-hmm. it would be that I would like a person to leave it feeling they know less about what art is than when they, not less about, but they are less confident that they know what art is mm-hmm. in the abstract. I don't want to interfere with anybody's personal sense of what they like in art or what they do in art or what is working for them in art or what's manifesting in their artwork or anything of that kind. And I do wish to interfere with the notion that an art education tells you what art is. Because I think it's the wrong approach to the question of what education is. And, I mean, I'm a fan of the original meaning of education. Educare in Latin is to lead you out, not to lead you in. Mm-hmm. Not to lead you into the house of art, where the decisions are made by consensus or by authority or by brilliance of academic assertion. But lead you out into a condition in which you are free to be in a fuller and more in a richer and more complex sense. And that somehow the more things you're exposed to as the possibilities of art, the more your own individual nature is provoked into being itself rather than being more like the dominant one of those so that one's work will get bought or be talked about or liked or you become eternal. Or being in the museum, or whatever those the criterion is for personal gain from art, but rather there's something that is not just gain in the ordinary sense, but is an actual condition of transformation, an actual condition of enrichment and enlargement of the human possibility in some way.
And I really those are very key words.
I would say.
That seem important in terms of the making and the experiencing of art. At least for me, I don't know what others are. And then they themselves can be changed. I mean, what the definitions of that
Absolutely.
Are. I think of something I read that Juan Gris wrote, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically it's all over once you know the outcome. And I keep that as a kind of a little note for myself in the studio, that it's all over once you know the outcome. So it really is about some kind of exploration and inquisitiveness that can lead to further knowledge or can just lead to sort of a greater expanse of confusion. But all of that is a way of being in the world. That may sound very confused, and it feels it at the moment.
Well, its best quality is that it's open. It's undecided.
Right.
And I mean, there's a great sensitivity to the undecided now, thanks to the deconstruction activity of Derrida and others that have made the undecided valorized. That is, valorized what is undecided or undecidable. It gives a category to what is open intellectually. But there are different ways that things are undecidable and undecided. It's not undecidable at all. There are lots of things that can be decided, and they can be decided in the moment, like the process that we were talking about in art. That certainty allows you to make decisions on the spot. But those decisions are not dependent upon an outside reference point. They are clear within the context of their own arising. That's somehow different from meeting a criterion, either a personal criterion that one has established for oneself, or that the culture seems to have established, or some aspect of the culture, some authority within art, or some tendency within art that apparently has the upper hand at the moment. But instead that there is a different kind of certainty, a different kind of knowing. And that's a very mysterious thing because it cannot be codified.
And you
know it when it's there, or as Charles Olson, the great poet Charles Olson said, you know it when it's there. it's right there in front of your eyes, and that's how you know it's right. That's when you know it, at that moment. That's a very interesting state, and it's one that if you then valorize that and allow that to undercut, say, rational thought and logical reasoning about things, you get into trouble. Because it's not that rational thought and logical reasoning aren't absolutely vital.
Absolutely.
You know.
But the certainty that you talk about is, it is something I think that has to be felt, or at least from my experience, that sense you're in it when you know it. And that's a good motivator to show up in the studio. Because the more you use the word earlier of training for it, using the word showing up, being there for it, that allows that experience to happen more often.
Yes,
it's not
right.
something that can just happen all the time without allowing yourself to be available for
right.
it. And that's in the studio, and of course it's elsewhere. It's elsewhere in life. It's driving on the thruway. It's having a conversation. It's waiting online at the supermarket. Making decisions about all kinds of things, but that is, and I absolutely agree that they are not, they are different experiences, the kind of rational decision-making and this sense of certainty that we're not quite defining, but we're both saying we've had the experience of, and they're both vital, and I think the sense of when each one is at play is also important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, well, we're entering into the question here, which we've touched on before, is the function of art at large.
Hmm.
I mean, a lot of art is very politically engaged now, and that's an understandable move for art to be making in a media-conscious world in which we have better information, as unpleasant as it may be, about world ecology, the state of the climate, the state of world order, disorder. Conflicts that are happening all over the planet, we have an immediate recognition of these things. So inevitably, art would reflect that greater awareness of those things. I personally am not comfortable at all with the notion that art should do that, or should, certainly I would never say that it should not. I don't think that it's our business to say what should or shouldn't be in somebody else's artwork.
Right.
You know, we've been living too long in a culture that makes it its business to say what should or shouldn't be in other people's lives, arts, thoughts, minds, professions, whatever, pleasure zones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just obsessed in our society with telling people what they should or shouldn't do inside those domains. I think that one should not be allowed to have too much authority in that statement. You know.
Do you think art falls outside of that realm of the shoulds then?
I think life falls outside of the shoulds. That shoulds, like that moment of certainty, should be truly known in the moment.
Yeah.
And not by a category. I mean, there are some shoulds we can't live without. Don't shoot anybody with a gun. Don't kill anybody. Don't hurt other people. I realize that we cannot abandon this dualistic perception about good and bad in all instances of our relative reality, however much we may aspire to that condition in our secret selves and souls or whatever, wherever that takes place, or even in our philosophy. But we are stuck with making decisions in the nature of life. The question is, who has the authority to govern those decisions? And that's a very complex issue. Art is one of those domains that's relatively free, at least in its possibility, of not having to deal with the limit question, killing somebody, getting Romney elected, all these terrible things that could happen on the planet Earth.
Uh-huh.
I'm not allowed to express political views on the station. I don't know, but
there you are.
Oh yeah, good. Down with Romney. No, okay, we'll skip that right now. I'm sure that most of the people listening to this don't need my opinion on that subject. They figured it out for themselves by now. But anyway, the point is that art would seem to be a relatively free zone in how that question is understood, not predetermined. There are tendencies within people who think very freely about that question, to prefer at large that one be politically engaged in one's work or not. I think art is profoundly political. But the level of which is political that interests me has to do with liberating the mind and liberating one's ability to think and be alive in such a way that one is not under the threat of authoritarian determination. What do you think?
Absolutely. I love hearing your thoughts on this. And it makes me think of an article that I was reading about in the Times, but it was a while ago. Pablo Neruda was speaking about how art is the absolute antithesis to capitalism. And the beauty of that being that it is, for the most part, something that people do out of an inner drive, which we were talking about earlier, you know, sort of a necessity, a need within oneself to express in any way.
Yeah.
And then they often give it away. You know, this is not, I'm not going to get into a whole dialogue about the art market, and boy, the rain's just picked up here, there's some extra sounds around the window, it's exciting energy. That by its very nature, there isn't a true exchange. I'm being very sidetracked by the rain here, but
so what we're Pablo Neruda.
His energy saying, "Yeah, try to paraphrase me more correctly." so that what's being created is not being exchanged for a set value. Mm-hmm. In that other things we can trade a certain value for a quart of milk, perhaps.
Right,
but that
right.
the kinds of things being created are beyond that. And I think that that's a really fascinating realm to work in. So that other senses of validation, of other senses of success or financial payback or something are, from my standpoint in this dialogue about art, not necessarily related. So it's this fabulous practice that people are engaged in that is in the face of all of that. And that it is also not necessarily about consumption. A lot of the art that fascinates me is very ephemeral. And so it's not about producing works that are going to clutter the planet, make a larger impact, and something that we can stockpile.
Yeah.
So I think that sense of a lot of energy going into producing something that is not necessarily physically tangible, takes up space, can be bought and sold, is fascinating. So there you go back to it being more about a pure experience than about consumption.
Well, it can be on the question of consumption without even being a consumable in the ordinary sense. It's not a commodity. In that sense, but there is, it exists in a society in which everything is commodified. So I think Neruda was protesting against that as a good communist. He, of course, was a communist and a statesman. You know. So he felt he could address that question with some degree of clarity. I mean, Neruda, as a Chilean poet, came from a context in which it was still possible for. It is still possible for poets to be statesmen. You know, I can't think of any instance in which that's happened in our society, where you have it happens in Europe. But
that's true. It does. Why doesn't it happen here?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because we don't have a lot of respect for the poet and the artist as that kind of person. You know, movie stars can obviously become president. We found that out. To our chagrin, and Clint Eastwood has just come out backing Romney, you know, which is really really sad in my soul because I am a man who has appreciated jazz and the plight of black people can't see what evil Romney will bring to those domains if he didn't care about anything else, then he should at least care about that. The big corporation is going to gobble those things up and destroy them, even when it pretends to be for them. That's going to happen, you know, in Romney's. The perfect puppet for those interests. He's nothing but a puppet for those interests. He has no self-existence at all. I don't even think there is a person named Romney. It's just this image that has been manufactured. And whenever he does show up having a real history, it's a sad history. It's a dangerous history. Yeah. But I'm not supposed to be talking about politics. We're talking about art is, what art is. I can't resist.
I
it's
see
that.
Moment, and he's
see.
Coming up. I think he's going to present his running mate soon.
Right. Oh, yeah, right. Ryan, Paul Ryan. The right wing is pushing him. I hope he has to do it because that would really divide things up the way they should be divided up. But it's very hard to, I mean, I don't make political art, but all my art is political in its nature. You know, that's what I say. But it doesn't foreground the point of view about a particular political position or political situation.
Well, I'm curious about that. Can you then talk about how your work, which I'm familiar with your work, is not outwardly political in the sense of any kind of slogan. So how do you see
it? But again, it has to do with freedom of the individual, of the mind, of not just individualism. but the freedom of a mind to know reality directly. Right. And to know the ultimate nature of reality if it brings itself to that point and be unobstructed in that. But as soon as one, you know, the right wing very often has those kinds of values in what it says. Capitalism, you know, could be said to represent that point of view. The right of the individual to make as much money as possible by any means necessary. Mm. You know, but it has nothing to do with stimulating market activity in areas where market activity can bring good to, as needed, to the people who are there. It's money for its own sake, it's value for its own sake. And so that's an important difference, you know. Money is nothing wrong with money. Money is the means by which we exchange things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might come up with a better system. That's debatable. But there's nothing intrinsically wrong with money.
I agree, and that's a given. But then I think in some realms of art, for many people, the art in exchange for money is a very large part of it, the art market, the art world. But what I think is fascinating is what is being exchanged if it's not always for the money, that there's something else being exchanged, this kind of something. It's not feeding people, it's not solving larger world problems, perhaps, but it's got to be feeding people something, or it wouldn't have existed as long as it is.
Exactly. But it's art does, I think that art does something to reality. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my question, is how does art affect reality? How does it reconfigure the configuration that reality is, the consensus. Reality is a consensus for the most part. We agree that those things are there, and we see them there before we even really get up close to them.
Sure.
We see things in advance, and that's, and I resent that art has allowed itself to become another instance of that, that people already know, oh, that's a conceptual artist, or that's not a conceptual artist, or conceptualism is good, and that other stuff, you know, is bad, or not interesting anymore. Painting can't happen, or, you know, any of these kinds of pronouncements, even if they are well motivated and are based upon very beautiful things that they see exist and want to represent that and want to arrive at that conclusion, but there is a very profound question as to whether that should be dominant in an art field, whether that kind of opinion, that kind of assertion should allow, and the education supports that. People leave making those kinds of distinctions almost before they see what's there. If they know what's there ahead of time, people write too many papers, and it's good to write papers, but they write too many papers by taking opinion and putting it in the foreground and then proving that that's the case. Mm-hmm. You know, cart before the horse, in my opinion. How are we doing here in terms of time? So we're approaching the next hour. We have been talking for a long time, Susie. I'm talking to Susie Surik, and we have another person coming in a matter of minutes. So, anything, final words you'd like to say about what art is, or are you happy with this very rich discussion that you have prompted by your lovely presence?
Well, thank you, George. I've enjoyed the conversation. I thank you for including me in this project, this ongoing project of yours of art is, and poetry is, and music is, because it is an investigation of each individual. And those parts of it that I've heard before, when I've seen sections of this, really are fascinating. Many of the people's work I know, and to hear them, you know, when you hit a nerve and get people to really speak about where the process is for them.
Well, some people, I have to hit a nerve in some people to make them talk. You're not one of those people, by the way.
I came with nerves exposed.
Your nerves are hanging out all over the place, and it's very easy to get you to talk. And I have a feeling if I let you, we would talk all afternoon together. We would never stop. This would go on and on and on.
I'll leave you some space for the others. Thank you so much.
If I'd known it was going to be so much fun, I wouldn't have invited all these other people.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for being here.
Well,
thanks for being on the station.
Yes, thanks for coming.